believe that last hymn was a combination of Presbyterian, Lutheran, Catholic. Yes, a little dab of all of it, John.
But it's in the Baptist hymn.
It's in the Baptist hymn. It's got hope. It's in the Baptist hymn. Yeah.
It had to be on the CD, and I'm trying to find it all the time, trying to find something that's connected with the hymn to use.
All right. You knew I wasn't going to let you pass on that one. Yeah.
I was prepared.
All right. If you got your Bible, turn with me to Ezekiel 31. Tonight we're going to close out God's judgment upon the Israelites through using of these many nations and stuff. And most of what we're going to deal with tonight is going to be where the Lord is dealing with these individuals who had these different ideas and thoughts and problems, and they thought they were the kingpins and didn't give God any credit for anything. But when we finish 31 and 32 and begin 33, then we're going to get into a new phase. Everything that Ezekiel has been able to share with the people is just what the Lord said, right? So this time, and starting Wednesday night, no, we'll be in Bible school Wednesday night, but next Sunday night I won't be here, so it'll next time we get around to it, we'll find ourselves where God is speaking concerning hope for this great land of ours. And we got the same need today. We need that same hope that God will spare us in our hearts and our lives. And tonight, Ezekiel is comparing Egypt to Assyria and calling Syria a cedar in Lebanon, a big, fine tree. And so that tree is going to fall. These Egyptians are going to find, you know, that the fall of that mighty nation of Assyria, who God's just going to use an example to them. Listen what he says. In the 11th year, in the third month, and on the first day, the word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, say to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and to his hordes or his followers, his little group that he has, or large group that he has. And he said, say to them, who can be compared with your with you in majesty? Consider Assyria, once a cedar in Lebanon, with beautiful branches overshadowing the forest. It towered on high, its tops above the thick foliage. The waters nourished it. Deep springs made it grow tall. Their streams flowed all around its base and sent their channels to all the trees of the field. And we know that it takes water, moisture, for stuff to grow, for stuff to produce. And he's using the comparison here for the Assyrians and the nation that they were at one time. Now they've come to a point in a place where God is going to deal his wrath with them. And then the Egyptians are going to, God's going to use the Assyrians to show the Egyptians what's going to happen to them. He said, their streams overflowed all around their base and sent their channels to all the trees of the field. So it towered higher than all the trees of the field. Its bogs increased and its branches grew long. spreading because of an abundance of water. They had everything it needed to make it big, strong, and tall. And God had blessed the Assyrians, he had blessed the Egyptians, and his heart and his life concerning these things here. And he's comparing that to them. He said, all the birds of the air nested in its bogs or its limbs. All the beasts of the field gave birth under its branches, seeking the shadow of shade there to give birth. All the great nations lived in its shade. It was majestic in beauty, and its spreadings bogs, all the outlying areas out there. For its roots went down to abundant water. The cedar in the garden of God could not revile it, nor could the pine trees equal its bogs, nor could the plain trees compare with its branches. No tree in the garden of God could match its beauty. And just like Assyria, these Egyptians, they took pride in their strength, their beauty, and you know, they built all those pyramids so all the pharaohs then and those to be would have a comfortable, beautiful burial place inside of those pyramids and stuff. Where Assyria and Egypt both prospered, so did the people prosper. And the people got to a point in a place where they left themselves separated from what God was going to do. You know, we're quick to forget sometimes. But I want us to do something tonight. I want us to make sure that we understand this specifically tonight. And that is that God is still in control. It may look like in our world that we are part of today that the universality of the world as a whole is in control. The powers to be are four or five heads and stuff. Who's going to have the final say? God is, isn't he? And he allowed some of this stuff. He allowed Nebuchadnezzar to take the Babylonians and go and beat out the Assyrians and the Egyptians and Jerusalem and all these. And so the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar, there was no doubt why their head was this big, is it? They'd won all these battles and they thought what? Look what we did. And they failed to give credit to who? God himself. And that's what he's saying here. As big and strong and powerful and beautiful as this nation was, wasn't any comparison to God and what he was doing in their hearts and their lives. Said no tree in the garden of God could match its beauty. Beyond compare. I made it beautiful with abundant branches, and it is the envy of all the trees of Eden in the Garden of Eden. All the trees of Eden, all those outlying nations of the world out there, they were jealous of Assyrian power and grandeur and the things that they was doing there. And he talks about, just a minute, the ruler of the nations and what's taking place there. And I think nobody really knows, but I believe that he's probably referring to Nebuchadnezzar again there. Look what he says in verse 10. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Because it towered on high, lifting its top above the thick foliage, and because it was proud of its height, I handed it over to the rulers of the nations for him to deal with according to its wickedness. I handed it over to the ruler of the nations for him to deal with it according to its wickedness. I cast it aside, and the most ruthless of foreign nations cut it down and left it. Its bogs fell on the mountains and in the valleys. Its branches lay broken in all the ravenous of the land. All the nations of the earth came out from under its shade and left it. All the birds of the air settled on the fallen tree, and all the beasts of the fields were ever to tower proudly on high, lifting their tops above the thick foliage. No other trees so well watered ever were ever to reach such a height. They are all destined for death. For the earth below, among mortal men, with those who go down to the pit or to eternal damnation. You think about this. He's foretelling here that as soon as the Babylonians found out that Jerusalem had fallen and that the exiles down in Babylon came from where? Jerusalem. Took that 6 month journey, went back. Nebuchadnezzar sent his armies after them for the third time, took all their treasures, all their goodies and stuff, and their hearts and their lives. And so Jerusalem on one end has grown back to a certain extent. The others still in exile down here. There was hope they could get Daniel out of there, but he's still in exile down there and at this time of the writings here. But Ezekiel is prophesying numerous activities that God is going to use to bring these folks down to reality and let them know. And what was it he's said all them times? I forgot what it was. I knew at one time how many times they said this. And then they will know what? That I am the Lord. That's right. All that he's doing here is to prove to them that I am the Lord. All those that were living under the shade or the shadow of these other places, Assyria, Egypt, Babylon, and stuff, God said, I'm going to bring them down. They'll no longer, the Assyrians were the biggest, strongest, powerful army that there was. He described it as being that tall Lebanon tree or cedar tree. Why did it grow? Why did it get big that way? Why did Egypt prosper? Egypt, when we think of Egypt, what do we think of? Dry, dusty, sandy land, don't we? All them movies I've watched, them cowboys trying to get across the desert, you know, to get away from their sin and wrong and their lives and stuff. They're all searching and all looking, and they have them mirages and stuff, and they'll look out there in the future and they'll see something out there, and it looks like what? A hole of water, don't it? And boy, it gives them hope. Only to get there to find out what. It's either poison or it's a dry hole in their heart and their life. This is what God's saying he's doing here. He's going to take all these things and he's going to bring them down to size. Verse 18 says, which of the trees of Eden can be compared with you in splendor and majesty? Yet you too will be brought down with the trees of Eden to the earth below. You will lie among the uncircumcised with those killed by the sword. This is Pharaoh and all of his hordes, his little towns and villages and friends and neighbors that's on his side here. He said they will lie among the uncircumcised, those that are killed by the sword. And he said up there a while ago, he said, I made the nations tremble at the sound of the fall. And I brought it down to the grave with those who would go down to the pit. And he's describing this as mourners who have come to the grave of Assyria and Egypt and soon to be Babylon, all these folks, and be cast into this pit that he's talking about here in his heart and his life, and what he's thinking concerning them. And old Pharaoh, he's thinking mighty highly of himself. He is described here as being like a lion in chapter 32. Said, in the 12th year, in the 12th month, and on the first day, the word of the Lord came to me and said, Son of man, take up a lament or a funeral message concerning Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and say to him, here the Lord's fixing to tell Pharaoh what's going to become of him. God says to him, you are like a lion among the nations. You are like a monster in the seas, thrashing about in your streams. And Pharaoh considered himself to be a mighty, mighty powerful man, strong man. But in God's eyes, you know, he said, you're like a lion among the nations. Got a big growl. But he said, you're also like a monster in the sea. And, you know, they had this idea in their minds, Satan had to put it there, you know, that out of the sea ever so often a monster would come up out of the waters and do all kind of, they had strange things and their thoughts and stuff. But God said, this monster of the sea that you're talking about is just something that's going to muddy the water, but it's not going to keep God from doing what he said he's going to do in their hearts and our lives. He said, you're like a monster in the sea, thrashing about in your stream. And if I can separate these papers, we're going to move on. Churning the water with your feet and muddy in the stream. I think of a gator or a crocodile I see on TV and stuff, you know, and they come in, that tail just swishing around, you know, and stuff. Muddy in the stream. Why do they do that? If the danger's in their way, they can go under and be hid. If the water was clear, well, they could be able to see. But muddy the waters. We have that saying that when people's trying to interfere in something that we're trying to accomplish, you know, all they're doing is trying to muddy the water, you know. Stir something up in their heart and their life. Look at verse 3. It said, this is what the sovereign Lord says. With a great throng of people, I will cast my net over you, and they will haul you up in my net. I will throw you on the land, and I'll hurl you on the open field. I will let all the birds of the air settle on you, and all the beasts of the earth gorge themselves on you. God had him trapped, didn't he? He said, I'm going to cast my net over you. I'm going to throw you onto the land, hurl you out into the open fields, and I'll let the birds of the air settle on you. All the beasts of the earth gorge themselves on you. That don't look like a very good way to go out to me, does it, you? But what's God saying to them? You've been top dog for a while. He let Nebuchadnezzar and he let Babylon win all these victories. He won those victories for them. because he wasn't for Pharaoh, he wasn't for Nebuchadnezzar, Egypt, or the Egyptians, or the Assyrians, the mightiest of all. And he talked about being the cedar that fell. He's telling here what he's going to accomplish. Now that he's accomplished through these tribes of people, his penalty that he's going to put upon Israel, now he's going to turn around and deal back his judgment upon these nations. Listen to what he said he's going to do besides throw them on the land. Hurl them into the open field. Let the birds of the air, the buzzards eat them. And different beasts gorge themselves and you have their feeling. Look at verse 5. I will spread your flesh on the mountains, and I'll fill the valley with your remains. I will trench the land with your flowing blood all the way to the mountains, and the ravines will be filled with your flesh. The mighty armies of these three nations of people are going to be dealt with by God. And he said, I'll spread your flesh on the mountain. I'll fill the water valleys with your remains. I'll trench the land with your flowing blood all the way to the mountains. And the ravines or the gullies will be filled with your flesh. All those armies, all those bogs that he talks about. And he said, verse 7, when I snuff you out, I will cover the heavens and I'll darken their stars. He said, wait a minute, I got to back up. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon will not give its light. All the shining lights in the heavens I will darken over you. I will bring darkness over your land, declares the sovereign Lord. You know, what happens in darkness? Can't see, can you? And you harden your life. And things that happen, you know, as familiar as we all are with our homes and stuff and where everything is, when something happens in the middle of the night and the electricity goes off, what do? We don't have a light there to see. We go trying to find our way to where the drawer that's got the flashlight in it, you know. Hunting, a lot of times, what do? We stump our toe or we butt our head or something happens. And we thought we knew our house, didn't we? And this is what he...
Or your wife's scared you're coming around the corner.
Yeah, that's right. So he's saying here, I'm going to bring darkness over the land. Out of that darkness... Who knows? Do the Egyptians know they're fighting the Assyrians, or the Assyrians the Babylonians, or the children that's left in Jerusalem? Who knows? They're in darkness. They don't know. And it reminds me of me and Mike Havard. We used to work for Lee Havard there, Uncle Lee, at the meat market. And Mr. Herb Kraft, he was there, and he'd pick us up in the morning, drop us off in the evening when we was coming to work on Saturday and stuff. But we went out of revenge. Some of them come back after we'd roll their yards at Halloween, being old boys, you know. And so they came back, going to roll my yard, Mike's yard, and they went to Mike's first. And so they was out there, they was busy, they were just wrapping them bushes and throwing and doing, you know. Owen slipped out the back door and eased out there and just got in there with them. And he was helping them just, they was rolling and throwing their toilet tissue and everything and stuff. I was driving the truck, I wouldn't do nothing like that, you know. I was a perfect little angel, you know, but I was setting on go if he come out with a gun or something. I'm going to get him and go, you know. And whenever he got through, he told Dahl, he said, hey, I think we got it pretty good, don't you, Dole? Dole said, yeah, I do. He said, all right, let's clean it up then. And he gathered all four of the boys up, and I went down the road and turned around and come back. He was standing in the mailbox when I come back. I had to help clean up then. Just being old boy, but God saying, you know, all the shining lights in heaven, I'm going to darken over you. I'll bring darkness over your land, declares the Lord. I will trouble the hearts of many people when I bring about your destruction among the nations, among lands you have not known. I will cause many people to be appalled at you. And as he's dealing with this, he said, their kings will shudder with horror because of you. When I brandish my sword before them on the day of your downfall, each of them will tremble every moment for his life. They'll walk continuously looking over their shoulder, wondering. God's sentence on them would be that they were going to what? Die. But the wonder for them was, when will I die? My heart and my life. You know, we don't like to wait, do we? We live in an instantaneous world, you know. I've always told folks, you know, that if the doctor ever tells me I got to have surgery, I want to have surgery right then. You just get on in here and let's do it. Don't send me home to wait 3 or 4 days and ponder and worry and walk the floor and fret and try to get, let's get it over with, you know. And he's saying here, I'm going to trouble the hearts of the people. I'm going to bring destruction upon the nation. Lands you have not known. I'll cause many people to be appalled at you. Their kings will shudder with horror because of you. When I brandish my sword before them, on the day of your downfall, each of them will tremble every moment. What's he trembling for? For his life. He knows that he's a marked individual. And it's when God speaks. But I want to tell you something else. Every one of us in this whole world of ours today are marked individuals. Either we're going to go with God when he calls, or we're going to be left behind. Just that simple. And he's talking about here, he said in verse 11, this is what the sovereign Lord says. The sword of the king of Babylon will come against you. These Babylonians are going to have one last victory here. I will cause your hordes or your armies to fall by the swords of mighty men, the most ruthless of all nations. How long did it take Babylon to overcome and defeat the Assyrians? Pop test now. A couple of 3 weeks ago, we studied that. 15 years. 15 years they fought them. What did it do during that 15 years, you remember? It wiped out all the supplies that they had in the fortified cities that there was, because they couldn't go in and couldn't go out, and made it easy for them. He said, they will shatter the pride of Egypt, and all their hordes, or all their friends, all their armies that's coming in from these little towns and villages and places to help them will be overthrown. I will destroy all of her cattle from beside abundant waters, no longer to be stirred by the foot of a man or muddied by the hoofs of cattle. Then I will let her waters settle and make her streams flow like oil, declares the sovereign Lord. And what they're taking place in their hearts and their lives. This is the lament they will chant for you. When I make Egypt desolate and strip the land of everything in it, when I strike down all who live there, then they will know that I am the Lord. That's the funeral chant that they had. Make Egypt desolate, strip the land of everything in it, strike down all who live there, then they will know that I am the Lord. Look at verse 17. Going to get into something kind of interesting here. At least it was to me. It said, in the 12th year, and on the 15th day of the month, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, wail for the hordes of Egypt, and consign to the earth below both her and the daughters of mighty nations, with those who go down to the pit. And the Hebrews believed in an afterlife. That's the reason the Egyptians built those big pyramids. They wanted him to, Pharaoh and his concubines and whatever, to have a comfortable place to live, because they believed in an afterlife. And I got a little note here that I'll read to you. It said, Ezekiel's message assumed that the evil nations had already been sent there to the pit, and that Egypt would share their fate. The words here are more poetic than they are doctrinal. The Egyptians had a preoccupation with the afterlife. The pyramids were built solely to ensure comfort for them in their next life. This message should remind us that any attempt to control our afterlife and ignore God is foolish. God alone controls the future. God alone controls our life now and forever, in our hearts and our lives. If it wasn't for his great love and mercy, what would happen to each one of us? Snatch us out of here in a heartbeat, wouldn't it? And things that we've done in our lives that say to them. All right? Verse 19, he said, say to them, are you more favored than others? Go down and be laid among the uncircumcised. They will fall among those killed by the sword. The sword is drawn. Let her be dragged off with all of her hordes. From within the grave, the mighty leaders will say of Egypt and her allies, they have come down and they lie with the uncircumcised, with those killed by the sword. What's the pit in the New Testament in comparison with the pit of the Old Testament here? The lake of fire. He said all those will be cast into the lake of fire, where they're weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. We discussed a lot of that this morning, our hearts and our lives, and what they're doing. 22 says Assyria is there with her whole army. She's surrounded by the graves of all of her slain, all who have fallen by the sword. Their graves are in the depths of the pit, and her army lies around her graves. All who have spread terror in the land of the living are slain and fallen by the sword. They had thought that they were a mighty army. But in comparison with God, what happened? Wasn't no match, was it? Elam is there with all of her friends around her grave. All of them are slain and fallen by the sword. all who had spread terror in the land of the living went down uncircumcised to the earth below. They bear their shame with those who go down to the pit. And Elam was at one time one of the strongest nations for warriors of any nation. And they got conquered by Nebuchadnezzar. Part of that 15-year battle that we told that it took for them to be able to do it. God went. Said they bear their shame with those who go down to the pit. A bed is made for her among the slain, with all of her friends around her grave. All of them are uncircumcised, killed by the sword, because their terror has spread in the land of the living. They bear their shame with those who go down to the pit. They are laid among the slain. Mesha and Tumah were territories located in the eastern part of Asia. We commonly know that today as the land that we call Turkey, where these two came from. He said they are there with all of their hordes around their graves. All of them are uncircumcised, killed by the sword, because they spread their terror into the land of the living. Do they not lie with the other uncircumcised warriors who have fallen, sharing the same grave, who went down to the grave with their weapons of war, whose swords were placed under their heads? The punishment for their sins rested on their bones. Though the terror of those warriors had stalked through the land of the living, they had terrorized the whole country, the whole nation at that time. And their wickedness and their evilness and their lack of any kind of compassion whatsoever for their fellow man. But their sword was placed, their head was rested on it, as they were cast down into the pits, here in their hearts and their lives. Verse 29 says, or 28 says, you too, O Pharaoh, will be broken and will lie among the uncircumcised, with those who have been killed by the sword. Edom is here, her kings and all of her princesses despise their power. They are laid with those killed by the sword. They lie with the uncircumcised, with those who go down to the pit. You know, they had this thing about the afterlife, you know. What concern should we have about the afterlife? Where are we going to spend it then? We're going to be with the Lord, or we're going to be cast into the lake of fire. All the princesses of the north and all the Sidonians are there. They went down with the slain in disgrace despite the terror caused by their power. They lie uncircumcised with those killed by the sword, and they bear their shame with those who go down to the pit. Disgrace. Once they were the top of the line, but now look at them. Pharaoh, he and all of his army will see them, and he will be consoled for all of his hordes that were killed by the sword, declares the sovereign Lord. Although I had him spread terror in the land of the living, Pharaoh and all of his hordes will be laid among the uncircumcised, with those who have been killed by the sword. God used them to teach the children of Israel a lesson for their disobedience in their hearts and their lives. But he promised in the beginning, just like he did with the Babylonians, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, and the Persians. The Persians, we'll find out next time, is right up there on top of the line of being the nation now that God will use. But we're through with God's judgment. We've had all the blood and guts that we're going to have. Now we're going to see hope for the world and these nations, that these great leaders and these hordes or these armies that they have that's surrounding them and caring and fighting for them and stuff. Through all of that, you know, God always leaves a remnant. And if you look that word remnant up, it means a tenth. And he always leaves about a tenth, you know. And I could be wrong, it's just Larry Haver thinking, but, you know, heaven might not be near as, you know, more like 10% than 90%, you know. Because so many people is going the way of the world instead of the way of God. Any question about this? Anything you want to share? I like y'all. You're a quiet bunch. Yeah. Do good. You learn anything out of this? God allows, but God's still in what? He's still the one. He's still in control in our hearts and our lives. No doubt about it. All about Bible school this week. Do not forget to pray hard. Gather up all the children in the neighborhood, family, friends, anyone you know. Remind them. You know, it's Bible school time. A lot of hard work been put into it. It's beautiful over there. Everything's fine. The table's set. Now we just need to bring on the food. Feed these children spiritually, number one. If they're hungry, we'll feed them physically, number two. Any thought, any care? Father, I thank you for the time that we've had to share. God, you showed us through these 33 chapters of Ezekiel here that, Lord, you've used these nations to bring on the punishment that you had for Israel because of their turning their back on you. But now, God, you've turned the table, and these nations that thought they were the biggest, strongest, toughest, baddest, whatever, are now feeling your wrath. One of these days, this country of ours, this old world, is going to experience your wrath as well. Lord, there's many needs in the lives of our people. There's many things that's been done to prepare for this week ahead. I pray, God, for your blessings on it. And I just thank you for the dedication of each and every one that has contributed to making this week of Bible school the best that it can be. Go with us now. Forgive us. It's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.